From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Film critic Aubrey Malone is my guest. His latest book is a biography of screen legend Maureen O'Hara, the star of The Quiet Man, How Green Was My Valley, The Miracle on 34th Street, and The Parent Trap, among others. The book is called Maureen O'Hara. Aubrey Malone, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you very much, Gary.
I enjoyed your book very much. Maureen O'Hara, as of this moment, is living. Did she cooperate with you? Is she aware of your book?
I don't know if she's aware of it or not, and she didn't cooperate, but she didn't say she didn't cooperate either. I mean, I don't know where she is on it. I've written biographies of people before who weren't living, and in a way, that's easier. When somebody's safely dead, they're not going to argue with you. I did one biography of a guy called Jimmy White, a snooker player, and a friend of mine said, you should have told him you were going to write about him, because I met him after I wrote it, and I didn't say who I was. And it was a kind of an awkward moment for both of us, because maybe he did know who I was, because I had met him a few times before. But I didn't meet Maureen. I tried to meet her. She had appeared in Kong a few times, which is where The Quiet Man was filmed. And she has come out of retirement at various functions. So I did make some connections there, and there was a moment where one of her people said, yes, she will meet you, and then the moment passed. So I thought, maybe, you know, she's heard that I'm delving too deeply into her life, because when a biographer attempts an unauthorized biography and then tries to meet the person afterwards, it's a little bit more difficult than when you tell the person before you start. Because maybe they don't trust you then. But I think I gave her a fair show on the book.
Oh, I think so too. And, you know, she is a fine actress and made many great films, and some good films and some not so good films. But she was never a movie star. She's no Joan Crawford or Barbara Stanwyck or something like that. She's in a different...
kind of a B-up sense. I mean, she never... threatened the establishment. She never had she had an iconic movie in The Quiet Man, if you like, but I've always felt in some senses that movie was overrated and a monkey on her back, in the sense that it stopped her stretching herself in other areas afterwards. But when you mention these people like Barbara Stanwyck and Joan Crawford and all that, I think Maureen was very lucky to have come into movies at a time when the woman's picture, which is a term I hate, but for want of a better word, it was coming into vogue, and the war had also meant that women were thrust into the center stage. So there were a lot of the main stars were fighting in the war, with the notable exception, of course, of John Wayne, who became a great friend and co-star of hers. But she was coming into movies without an apprenticeship as such, because she had jumped the queue, as it were, jumped the line due to the Svengali influence of Charles Laughton. And then she arrives at RKO, and they're looking for a new face. As Norma Desmond said, they had faces then. And Maureen O'Hara's face was second to none. Beautiful-looking woman, a nice figure, and a great dancer, a singer, a nice speaking voice, good presence. So she had all the attributes. And she's suddenly thrust into this kind of homey studio, RKO, who has, you know, not too many high-profile stars. They had just lost Constance Bennett and Catherine Hepburn, so they were looking for somebody big. You know, they had Joan Fontaine and Lucille Ball, who also became a friend of hers. But when she was, just too late perhaps to play Scarlett O'Hara, which would have been an interesting one if she had been born a few years earlier, I often thought that Maureen could have been in the hunt for that part. It would have been a good anecdote for my book if she had been auditioned for it. But she did get a very early exposure, you know, from these high-profile movies, like working with Alfred Hitchcock on Jamaica Inn, you know, for the first and only time, and then The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And suddenly, you know, it's just all happening for her. So I think she often said she had the look of the Irish, and she certainly did in the sense of her timing. And as you say, she wouldn't have been a Joan Crawford. She didn't have a Mildred Pierce, as it were. She never had a movie where, you know, you could say that's the iconic movie of Maureen O'Hara from the point of view that it's going to change the way we perceive films, or indeed the way we perceive life. Because she always had a kind of a right-wing attitude to life, like She never went on suspension. She never threatened the establishment. She never argued really with directors. Like, this is this image we have of the fiery Maureen. It's in a way, it's a charade, I think, because she was only fiery on small issues, not big ones.
What were some of the things that would get her fiery?
Well, I mean, she was a good old-fashioned Irish Catholic, is a good old-fashioned Irish Catholic. We shouldn't talk about her in the past tense. And, you know, I mentioned various anecdotes in the book where she would, you know, get annoyed with somebody if they were too romantic with her in a scene. She would get annoyed about money. I mean, she was, you know, Darla Sanek was paying her, what, $4,000 a week or something? Like, that was a phenomenal amount at that time for somebody who was relatively unknown. So she had a good business sense. I mean, I'm of the opinion that actors should be a little bit mad. You know, I've done some acting myself, and I've met a lot of actors, and they have this, you know, kind of eccentricity. Like, I've often thought if life was a circus, you know, Maureen O'Hara would be more like the lion tamer instead of the clown. You know, she's very much earthy. She's grounded. And when I was writing the book, one of the readers asked me to delve into possible neurosis of Maureen O'Hara, and I thought, how could I do that? Because there are none. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons that she found it difficult to dig into any method area of herself. And that's why I would have had a problem with Maureen O'Hara. She was never one of my favorite actresses, but I loved doing the book, and I loved researching it because she had such a fantastically interesting life. I mean, I see her more as a symbol of things than an endemically interesting person in herself. And that's why, to answer your question about interviewing her, I didn't miss greatly the fact that I didn't interview her, because I felt in a way she would have been just rehashing the kind of stuff that she's been saying, you know, for the last 50 years, which is interesting in as far as it goes, but it doesn't change. You know, she's like a machine that you just wind up like a clockwork toy, and she just keeps rehashing the same stuff. So I didn't need to do that. But having said that, I think she did that in her movies as well, because she wasn't encouraged to diversify herself. Like, the studio system didn't do that, as you know. You know, at that time, you went to the movies because you wanted to see, you know, you wanted to see Gloria Swanson, or you wanted to see, you know, Jean Harlow or something. And no matter what they were in, what dross they were in, you know, the star overrode the project. And in our own era, you know, it's the other way around. And that's why we don't have a star system anymore. So that's why, as I say, I love delving into the classic area of movies, the studio era, which Maureen epitomized like nobody else.
We're talking with Aubrey Malone, and his new book is a biography of Maureen O'Hara. You mentioned that she would take offense by... well, she said somebody stuck his tongue down her throat during a kiss.
Yeah, George Montgomery, I think it was. Yeah, that was an early example of something like that. And that's why she got on so well with John Wayne, because he would never make a pass at her. I mean, he said she was a great guy. It's like when I think George Cukor said of Ava Gardner, the most perfect gentleman I ever met. And Ava Gardner took that as a compliment, because Ava Gardner, like Maureen O'Hara, was a tomboy. And when you are a tomboy and you're also beautiful, you tick all the boxes, don't you? You know, you've got it all. So that's why she was highly employable and highly sought after. Because when you got Maureen O'Hara in a movie, you knew you weren't going to have trouble with her. You knew she wasn't going to be a Betty Davis, you know, that she was going to say, I don't like this and I don't like that in a scene. Having said that, she had a great intelligence. I think John M. Stahl said that she was able to ride with the scene. And she was able to improvise if something happened, that, you know, she would be able to step sideways and change. But I'm sure you're aware that she was trying to set up a heritage center until recently in Glengariff in Ireland, where she lived for many years. And she was going to set up a museum for memorabilia, but also to have an acting school. And one of the things I was a little bit perturbed to read was that she wanted people to hit their marks and not have any improvisation. And one of Maureen's quotes that I quote in the book is, when she was asked to sum up her life, she said, I worked hard and learned my lines. And that's okay. I mean, I have no problem with that. But I think we should put that to bed and say, that ain't the way we do it anymore. And you know, it's constraining. And she was in a straitjacket herself for so much of her career in those Pirate Queen movies and those Maureen Sahara movies, as they call them. And she didn't attempt to break out of it because, you know, she was a career actress. She went to work. She went to work like an office job. And, like, her private life was like she was a basket case in her private life because she was just too busy to think about the other things. And that's the other part of my book, which I think will be of interest to your readers, the fact that, you know, her marriages were so disastrous.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, she's an inherently conservative person. You mentioned that she doesn't pose for pictures showing her legs or... But at the same time, you know, well, she got married. She was married for about 20 minutes, and then she got married again, and that was a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I think she said she didn't do leg art. She didn't do cheesecake. And I contemplate the fact that maybe part of the reason was ethical, and part of the reason was that she didn't think she had good legs. But she also said maybe her mother wouldn't like it if she saw her doing those kind of shots. But maybe you've got to think about these things when you contemplate a career in acting, and when you dress like Maureen did, or rather undress like Maureen did. Like she was very provocative. She went so far and no further. Like she would bring you to the door of the boudoir and then slap your face. And that made for good drama, and like it, you know, maybe we got tired of seeing that after a while, and that's why, as I say, the epitomic movie, Quiet Man, which has all those classic scenes where she's fighting John Wayne 1 minute and then kissing him the next, and then he's kicking her in the rear end or whatever. Yeah. Like that's a great time, you know, and a great return to her native soil for her. But I have to feel that when I look at that movie, I see a stage Irish persona. I see Maureen O'Hara, the person that would have been a great success in the Abbey Theatre. And maybe in a sense, you know, she should have stayed in the Abbey Theatre, because I never saw her as an actual film actress. I saw her as a person trying to be a film actress. I mean, she couldn't do comedy, for instance. You know, with regard to drama... You know, a lot of the time you could see the machinery moving, and I think acting is all about concentration, whereas I wouldn't have seen that concentration in Maureen O'Hara, but I would have enjoyed some of her movies, like she did one noir movie, The Fallen Sparrow, which I enjoyed, and another semi-noir movie, A Woman's Secret, for Nicholas Ray. And I feel that there were signs there that she could have stretched herself further, which maybe she didn't even see herself. But I think there were opportunities missed. And I think the reason they were missed is because she didn't actually have the obsessive need that the method school would have had. And I quote her in the book saying that method acting is Tommy rot. You know, it's like that anecdote that people often quote between Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman, where, you know, Dustin Hoffman stays up all night to look tired, and Laurence Olivier says, "Why don't you try acting?" Like, there's a classic moment there where two different schools are coming together. Well, very definitely Maureen O'Hara would have been in the Laurence Olivier school, and I would be in the Dustin Hoffman school. That's not necessarily to say that I believe he should have stayed up all night, but his intentions were honorable. Whereas Laurence Olivier, I just always saw him as doing plays with the camera turned on, and I feel that I would have been bored to tears watching any Laurence Olivier movie. To an extent, with Maureen O'Hara, you know, I did have to watch her movies when I was writing this book, but she wouldn't have been somebody I sought out in my youth to see a Maureen O'Hara movie. You know, she obviously, I was very sexually attracted to her as a young man, a hot-blooded male, but she wouldn't have been one of my favorite actresses. I did go for more of the overtly feisty actresses, like Bette Davis. Joan Crawford, I felt, was totally melodramatic, a million times more than Maureen O'Hara. And that's why, you know, Maureen kind of slots herself in the middle. She's credible. You can never sort of say she's doing this wrong or she's doing that wrong. But I do feel that it's sad that she didn't push herself a little bit more, and that she just held out, you know, for the big paychecks. and that she, you know, didn't. She said that the great directors didn't search her out, but they would have searched her out if she proved that she was willing to take chances and not always have herself quaffed to within an inch of her life, or prioritize, you know, the fashion sense. You know, like, she came from a family. Her mother, you know, designed clothes, and, you know, she called herself part of the Von Trapp family. So when she was growing up, they would have had musical evenings. So she was kind of an Edwardian figure, and that's why she tended to sneer at movies. And I always felt there was a little bit of that high-hatting that went on, that, you know, movies were the kind of dumbed-down medium, and I'm gracing them with my presence. And I think that was one of the reasons she succeeded so well, because people like confident people, and she was confident in front of the camera. And there's a famous anecdote I relate in the book where she wouldn't do a screen test for Charles Laughton because she hadn't prepared for it, which was very arrogant at that time. And I think she carried that arrogance all through her life. And I think that some people would have had a problem with that. A lot of people would have had a problem with her acting chops as well. I mean, John Garfield laughed about her inability to act, which I thought was ironic, because I did like her in the movie she made with him, The Fallen Sparrow. Clifton Webb was nervous meeting her because he had heard she was difficult. Now, why do we talk about Maureen O'Hara as difficult? Because nobody ever said she was. But she had a way of making you feel awkward, and that's why we talk about this flame-haired siren with the feisty temperament, the red-haired Colleen with the classic temper. Bette Davis used to talk about the difference between temper and temperament. I think that Maureen O'Hara had a temper problem, but not a temperament problem, and that probably caused the longevity of her career.
So you think a little neurosis might have done her some good?
I do. I think it would have done her career some good, but who am I to judge? I mean, like, she owes me nothing. She. If she heard this conversation, she would say, "Who the hell does Aubrey Malone think he is, wanting me to be neurotic?" I mean, neurotic people don't sleep at night. I like to sleep at night. I like to get up early in the morning. I like to have a good meal. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't socialize to excess. I don't express radical opinions. Do you know, like, she wouldn't have been, you know, hauled before the House on American Activities if it came to it. She wouldn't have put herself on the line. But there's a lot of people like her. It's just that she was such an interesting figure for me as an Irish person, because we didn't have anybody on the world stage before her. I mean, who was there that was Irish? Like, we have a dozen of them now, but Greer Garson, I suppose, was
Barry Fitzgerald, no?
Yeah, Barry Fitzgerald, but I'm trying to think of women.
No, like, there weren't any.
Yeah, there weren't any. There weren't any. And that's why, you know, she flew the flag for us, and then she had that famous incident where she had the passport row.
Mm.
So she was doing things. And you know, she had a very active imagination as well. And there's another anecdote in the book where I talk about the fact that she thought her husband was trying to murder her at one stage. And there's another one where she feels she was going to be kidnapped when she came to Ireland. So there's a lot of interesting stories around the movies. And that's why I wanted to talk about her as a person rather than as an actress. Because even with regard to Sam Peckinpah, she had a row with Sam Peckinpah on the set of The Deadly Companions, one of the later westerns, and they ended up not talking because her brother was the producer of the movie, and he was pushing Peckinpah around because Peckinpah was just starting out and he had no clout at that point. So you had the unprecedented situation of a director not allowed to talk to his main star. I mean, how are you going to make a movie where you can't direct somebody? So I wanted to delve into that a bit more. I also wanted to delve into her. She had a row with Elsa Lanchester, Charles Laughton's wife, who felt she was too good to be true. Like the squeaky clean image she put out, Elsa Lanchester had a famous quote, you know, butter wouldn't melt in her mouth or anywhere else. and I wanted to go into that, but, you know, there just, you know, was a balance that had to be struck too. I wanted to be a tribute to her, and I didn't want to criticize her too much, but I tried to get a balanced perspective on her life from the point of view of her personal life, her career life, the choices she made, the mistakes she made, the mistakes she made in husbands. Was she to blame? You mentioned the one-day marriage. She was duped into that, definitely. But at the same time, I bring out in the later part of the book, which, again, I was happy to do because nobody has done this before me, I discovered what had happened to that husband afterwards, and he did make a good career for himself and reared a very successful journalistic daughter who tried to meet Maureen on one occasion, and Maureen wouldn't talk to her. So this was, you know, the area that I wanted to cover, and this is possibly one of the reasons she didn't want to talk to me, if indeed she did know anything about me. She may not even know I exist until the book came out. Do you know what I mean? Her minders were promising me an interview, and I would have loved to have sat down because I had a range of questions I would have liked to have asked her, but maybe she'd have turned that famous temper on me.
We're talking with Aubrey Malone, and his book is called Maureen O'Hara. Well, her most famous film, The Quiet Man, is really a movie about sex.
Yes, indeed, and sex was always more interesting on the screen when it wasn't shown. Like today, we're not interested in sexual movies. Erica Young said that when I watch a sex movie for 5 minutes, I don't want to do anything else but have sex, and then after 10 minutes, I want to do anything but have sex. And I think that's what the problem with the permissiveness today. And that's why the seductive appeal of Maureen in those scenes, particularly those reverberative scenes in the churchyard in The Quiet Man, which have entered into film lore. And I would say she was sexual but not sexy, if I may permit that nuance. She was not a siren in that sense. Like she hauled herself back to a certain degree, but I think the Quiet Man is a film about sex, but it's also about a lot of other things as well, isn't it? Isn't it about the respect that she would have wanted from the man who was going to give her a dowry? You know, which again is something that you may not know too much about in California. It's an Irish tradition,
right? But of course, she withholds sex in order to get John Wayne to fight for her dowry.
Exactly, and indeed, that would be something one could imagine her doing in real life as well. But I think the thing she always said, and what John Wayne always said, was that to paraphrase a comment of Billy Wilder, he said, what we call dirty in Hollywood, they call lusty in on the continent. Mm-hmm. And I think lusty is a word I like. I don't like the word dirty. You know, I don't like the word pornographic. But lusty, to me, is a more natural evocation of one's instincts. And from that point of view, Maureen could happily make a family movie, which was also had reverberations of sexual imagery in it. I go into the fact of where she made the Battle of the Villa Fiorita in her later career and denounced films like Last Tango in Paris, which had been made around that time, a film like, say, Fellini's Eight and a Half, you know, any of those movies which would have these bosomy continental types. Maureen trod a middle ground between exactly how far she went on the sexual angle, but I felt she was trying to play it both ways to some extent. But I don't want to denounce her for that, because I'm sure she was in her own mind, she was very clear-cut in her views. I mean, I say in the introduction to the book that, you know, she's black and white, and she walks down a certain path, and God forbid if anybody should block her in that path. And that's okay, because you know where you stand with a person like that. You may not like it, but no more than somebody like Ronald Reagan or Margaret Thatcher, she's very clear-cut about where she stands. So, you know, there's no double agenda.
Yeah. Well, now, sometimes that could really hurt her career. I mean, for instance, you mentioned when she made The Parent Trap that she squabbled with Disney. Whereas when Fred McMurray moved to Disney Films, he then prolonged his career for many, many years by making the pictures that he made at Disney.
Yes.
And she could have done the same.
That's right. And there's a new movie out about Walt Disney at the moment, Saving Mr. Banks, which you may have heard about with Tom Hanks, which I was hauled over the coals by a reviewer of my biography of Maureen O'Hara, because I said in the book that Maureen tried to get Walt Disney to make Mary Poppins, and this person, Leonard Maltin is his name. He's a
legend. We've heard of him, yes.
Yeah. I use his guide as a Bible when I'm checking sources.
Sure.
He said that Disney was chasing the author of Mary Poppins for years. So Maureen wouldn't have been the first to come to Walt Disney looking to get that project filmed. So I was glad to hear that. But it was interesting that she did make The Parent Trap, because that was another example of her reinventing herself, because at that point her career was in free fall, and it was a question of, you know, you have reached the end of the road as a sex symbol, so where do you go now? And she played a mother for the first time in The Parent Trap, so it's like the first time appearing as a mother, you know, is a seismic, you know, culture shock for an actress, and she handled it very well, because she was still very attractive as a mother, and she continued to play mothers in, you know, Spencer's Mountain and a range of other movies. And, you know, maybe she was too glamorous. I made the point that I didn't think she could have raised as many children as she did in Spencer's Mountain and look as good as she did.
Still have that tiny waist.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. She looked as if she'd just come out of the beauty parlor rather than the maternity ward. You know, she appeared in these motherly roles. People do like to see eye candy on screen, don't they? And that's why she prolonged her career, albeit at the expense of having a run-in with Walt Disney, which probably was career suicide for any other possible Disney vehicles. But having said that, she did, you know, probably make a lot of money out of The Parent Trap, and it was like, here's phase two of my career coming up.
We've been talking with Aubrey Malone and his new book. It's a fine book, and it's called Maureen O'Hara, and it's a book about, not just about Maureen O'Hara, but about the era in which she worked. And Aubrey Malone, thank you for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you very much, Gary. I enjoyed talking to you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can find us on Facebook. I want to thank Aubrey Malone for being my guest. His book is called Maureen O'Hara, The Biography. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.